We own this country.
We own it. And it's not you owning it and not politicians owning it. Politicians are employees of ours. And they're just going to come around and beg for votes every few years, and it's the same old deal. But I just think that it's important that you realize that whether you're Democrat or whether you're a Republican or whether you're Libertarian or whatever, when somebody does not do the job, we've got to let them go.
When your entire culture is under attack, you need the country's number one voice in defense of our American way of life. You need an ally in the fight against tyranny and corruption. You need your weekly dose of Lisa Payne Nager. Missouri Grassroots Radio Network proudly adds our own beauty to America the Beautiful, your own culture vigilante, Ms. Lisa Payne Nager.
This is Lisa Payne Nager. It is a never-ending stream of news and issues developing across the country. Every week there's something new going on, something new attacking your personal liberties. And this week is no different. I'm here with Cindy McGee. We're going to talk about all of the issues that have been developing over the last week, the new issues, get you updated on some of the things that have been going on, and just kind of try to get you revved up to fight back. We had some good news in the news this week, and I think it's because we've had a lot of personal involvement from the folks out there making their voices heard, and that's been a good thing. We've got some things on the horizon that are not looking so good, and we'll probably discuss all of it tonight. I'm just kind of at a quandary here, got things going on at the last minute as we go on the air, but want to thank Cindy McGee for sitting in with me. And Cindy, what you and I haven't really talked very much today before we went on the air, but what's going on in the news this week? That's the most critical thing to you, I think. My opinion, it would be the Roma Key case, the homeschooling case, the folks being let back or allowed to stay here in the United States. Oh. Cindy, did I lose you? Well, we must be having some technical difficulties here, folks. Here on Missouri Grassroots.
I put on hold. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay, good. Are you okay?
I normally did it playing with my mouth.
Okay.
The Roma Key case is huge, and it's a big victory, and it, you know, I know that there are a lot of people who have really invested their time and their voice to reach out to try and help, you know, in whatever way they could, and so that's a huge win for now, I think.
Yeah. I think we're going to have Mike Donnelly from HSLDA, the international director for HSLDA, on with us in a little while to talk about that case and maybe give us some insights. I mean, there have been a lot of stuff flying around. These folks have been attacked for years since they came to this country, legally came to this country, I might add, and the federal government has just been dogging them. And all of a sudden, the Supreme Court decided that they were not going to hear their case. The folks at HSLDA were taking their case all the way to the Supreme Court to allow these people the right to homeschool their kids. They fled here from Germany under religious persecution. And legally, the government allowed them in. And after, I don't know how, 4 years of just being dogged by Eric Holder, they decided that the Supreme Court decided they couldn't possibly squeeze this case into their docket this year. And all of a sudden, Eric Holder said, well, that's all right. We'll let him stay. Yeah.
You know, I want to thank you for bringing up the point, Lisa, that this family came to the United States legally. They sought asylum. They were in danger of losing their children and going to prison in Germany simply because they were homeschooling, because they chose not to have their children educated and indoctrinated in state-run schools. The United States recognizes homeschooling, at least so far, as a parental and, I would say, even human rights issue. And so when this family came here legally, you know, we should have granted them asylum. Their children were at risk. They were at risk. And, you know, I think about the day before yesterday when the Supreme Court refused to hear this case, I looked at Chuck, my husband, and I said, you know, and if I offend somebody, then maybe you need to listen to another show. But I'm sorry, Lisa. I shouldn't have said that. I told Chuck, I said, you know, they need to move to California. They need to start speaking with a Mexican accent. And maybe everything will be okay. Then they'll get to stay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so here's my conspiracy, because I am a kind of a conspiracy theory person. Everybody knows that who's listened to me for any length of time. Okay, so here we are with the Supreme Court, and you know, Cindy, I'm not a big, you know, I'm crazy nuts over the judicial system. I really think that it's the judicial system that is really sawing the legs off from under, you know, from underneath us. So, and after the Obamacare ruling, which totally just told me the fix is in, you know, they can be bought, because I just never thought that was a legitimate ruling under any circumstance. So here we go. We have the Romicky family here coming into the United States. I mean, this is cut and dried. Coming into the United States legally, you know, doing all of the legal processes, everything checks out beautifully. A very nice, productive family, paying taxes, not breaking any laws. You know, the fabric of, and this is the problem, these are the kind of people that you want in America. You know, they're
right.
Good conservative Christian folks, hardworking, strong family, you know, strong family.
Mm-hmm.
And they just go after them, and the Supreme Court can't bother to take the case. All of a sudden,
right.
The Supreme Court cannot bother to take the case. But on Glenn Beck, they said today, there's another religious freedom case where an imprisoned guy is suing or has, you know, sued. They're going to hear that case so that he can keep his beard in jail.
Excuse me? He's a Muslim, and he's committed murder, and he's been convicted, and he's suing because he should be allowed to keep his beard when the prison rules are that you can't have a beard. And so the Supreme Court has the time to hear a religious freedom case like that, but they can't. My head hasn't stopped spinning on my shoulders yet, to be honest.
Yeah,
it's so indicative of what's going wrong in our country and what's wrong with our judicial system. And, I could just go on and on. It's just so indicative of what we're up against right now. And we're living in an upside-down world.
And nobody,
you know. And you and I have talked about that.
Oh, yeah, over and over. But nobody's looking. I mean, we're all talking about the corruption in the executive branch, and we're talking about the corruption in the legislative branch. Nobody's talking about the corruption in the judicial branch. And really, we need to focus on that. We need to focus on that. We need to focus on that. Did I say we need to focus on that? Because, I mean, we are just missing the boat here, because that is the last bastion. You know, that's where you go. When you can't get the other two branches to work correctly, you go to the judicial branch. And I'm telling you, on every level of that branch of government, from the very most local level all the way to the top of the Supreme Court, I think is just corroded beyond repair. You need to set a match to it and burn it down and build it again.
Right. Well, and, you know, you have to question what I would just term the very incestuous nature of our political system now, where you have our courts, where obviously there are lawyers trained that way, and then you have our legislative and judicial branch, which is just chock full of, again, lawyers and former lawyers and judges and so forth and so on, and there's so many people steeped in that particular area of expertise and not in anything else. It really, in my mind, it begs the question, maybe we ought to prohibit lawyers from running for office.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, before we get the lawyers on here from HSLDA to talk about what they're going to talk about.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That.
But they're not running for office. They're just here to give an opinion and to explain
Absolutely.
What's going on.
But, yeah, I mean, our entire country is being run by lawyers, and they're making the rules, and it's their playing field.
They interpret the law gets reinterpreted all the time, and it just leaves you scratching your head and wondering what the heck is going on. And, you know, last week, if anybody listened to the show, it was really good when we were talking about what's going on here in Missouri with the courts and what's going on in the Justina Pelletier case and the Romicky case. And, you know, it just goes on, and you just stand there with your mouth open and you're shaking your head going, what's going on in the world, in the United States, not the world, right here in our country?
Yeah.
Why can't we get this right?
Right. absolutely. Just really ticks me off. I don't know. Just really ticks me off.
I don't know if you were, ready to go into that or anything, but
yeah, go ahead.
Story out of Texas where the teacher, late last week, the charges against a 31-year-old teacher, male teacher, in Texas were dropped because it was determined that he had been sexting with a 13-year-old student.
It was a woman.
All right. Are you ready for this? 700 messages between them, text messages.
Yeah.
Of them, he was partially clothed. In at least one picture that they talked about, she sent a picture to him of herself in from the waist up in nothing but her bra. I mean, and they dropped the charges because they felt that it would be a violation of his freedom of speech to prosecute him for this. And because they dropped the charges, he can now continue to teach.
Okay, so I'm confused. I thought this was a woman teacher that did this sexting.
No, it was a man.
A man teacher.
Sexting with a 13-year-old girl.
Oh, good Lord.
One of his students. Uh-huh.
Okay. So, you told me about this story today. I was not aware of this story. So I Googled.
This story isn't getting a lot of attention.
Okay, but here's an interesting thing. Yeah, exactly. So I Googled, and I got one of the things I pulled up today was the Huffington Post. I think I Googled teacher sexting student. And January of 14, okay, so this must be it, acting up drama teacher student. Okay, so Huffington Post reported that in January. In December of 20, and then the next thing is December of 2012, teachers administrators charged in New Jersey high school sex scandal. Okay, and then in June of 2012, CPS teacher allegedly assaulted sexted students in Chicago. Okay, and then in November of 2011, high school teacher charged with sexting 15-year-old boy. Okay, and that's just page one. So good God, this is just common, you know, look at the people we're hiring to be in our public schools with
I know.
I'm just shocked by, so like several years ago, what was the story with the woman who had the babies of the kid, the 14-year-old kid? Yeah.
Yes, I remember it begs the question again, you know, what is happening to our society? We're living in a morally bankrupt society, and I got news for you folks. Our founders warned us that our Constitution and our form of government would only work for a virtuous and religious people. So I think we're beginning to understand part of where the meltdown's happening here. But it blows my mind. And this is putting our children at extreme risk when our court system is incapable of protecting our children, the children who are being abused, whether it's Justina Pelletier, whether it's this young 13-year-old. And, yes, I mean, you know, we could talk about the parents' responsibility to know what their daughter's doing, blah, 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 blah. I get all of that, but I'll tell you what. This is a 31-year-old pervert preying on a 13-year-old child.
So what do you think is
okay? He should be going to prison.
So what do you think really will happen to him? Okay, so let's flash back 1 week from today when we had on Paul Ellison. You know, the case in Missouri that with the schools actually overriding a parenting plan, but four years their case was being dragged out. Those kids were, and this is not, it's not a sexual abuse case per se. I mean, there is sexual abuse being alleged, let's talk about the justice system and the court system, where you're pulling kids into that system and they're getting abused in that system, and you know, judges aren't. You know, judges aren't watching over that.
Right.
I mean, you know, and the DFS folks, they're not watching over that. And
nope.
I mean, just so interesting how this is all exploding all at once. I mean, it's been going on for decades, and we made that point last week. But this is all exploding all over at once. I mean, it just emphasizes the point more. We need to be focused on the judiciary. The judicial system is just a big damn mess, and nobody is watching this. And until you get pulled into it, people don't think anything of it. And when you do get pulled into it, it's a huge shock because you think people are actually acting morally.
Right. And the saddest part of it all, Lisa, is it is one of our three branches of government that are supposed to be the check and balance on abuse of power. And they are supposed to not make law, but to make sure that law is properly enforced and that when people are, you know, criminally convicted of crimes, that they're justly punished, that people do get fair trials, that people get, you know, that things are done properly so that citizens are not subjected to illegal searches and seizures. I mean, we're living in such an upside-down world where this kind of thing is codified and it's called free speech, and yet people are, you've got DFS agents and you've got all sorts of court entities that are abusing their power and hurting children. And let's go back to the let's also go back to what we've talked about, Lisa, with the militarization of the police and the fact that people's homes are being broken into by police, by law enforcement, with no legal search warrants or any probable cause, and they're having things removed from their homes. Some people have been shot in their homes in the midst of a break-in by these law enforcement people, and that's codified also. I mean, it's really an upside-down world. The judicial system is not performing the way it was intended to perform under the Constitution when it was set up.
Oh, not even close. Not even close.
And when was the last time a judge was impeached?
Oh, well, not in Missouri since the Civil War, since before the Civil War. I can tell you that. And impeachment, you know what? Let's talk about impeachment. Let's talk about the meaning of that word and why does that word cause the skin to crawl of anybody who's ever been elected. If you say impeachment, I mean, my congressman, Blaine Lutkemeyer, actually breaks out in a rash if somebody talks about impeachment here. And we know that, you know, there's a lot of cause to do some impeaching in the White House. But even on a local level, the judges that are causing cases, not unlike the kid who sued the parents for not sending her to college or whatever.
Oh yeah.
That judge actually did the right thing in this case. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, stuff like that is going through all the time, and these judges are allowing these cases to go through courts. This particular judge did not. But, I mean, either just because they're moneymakers. I mean, they have the legal system has become an industry, and it's moneymakers, and they're just, they don't dismiss these cases when they should be dismissing these cases.
Mm-hmm. So. You're absolutely right. It's really sad. Our entire system is just breaking down and falling apart.
Yeah, in a huge, huge way. So we were going to talk about this later, but we have a few minutes. Our caller hasn't called in yet. This week I wrote an article. I write for politichicks.tv upon occasion. And did you watch the Oscars? I guess you probably didn't watch the Oscars. I don't think that you're an Oscar watcher.
I didn't hear about them. Yes, I heard about it, and I read your article. It was very good.
Okay, yeah, I did happen. Sometimes I watch them, sometimes I don't. After the MTV Music Awards and Miley Cyrus going crazy, I kind of just really don't watch them very much. And, like, past Grammy Awards and stuff, I mean, if you can't pole dance and do lap dances and stuff, kids, you know, it's really sad because kids today do not know what talent is. You know, they're not exposed to real talent like we were when we were growing up. How old does that sound? But these music awards, they're just... All right. These award shows are disgusting. I mean, the things that they have on the... Okay, so anyway, let's just not go down that road. Let's go back to the Oscars. So I did watch the Oscars. And first of all, Ellen DeGeneres, I really like her. I think she's hilarious. She was the MC for the Oscars, and she made a huge, huge joke. One of the movies nominated for Best Picture was 12 Years a Slave, and the joke that she made, and I can't remember. Let's see if I can pull the quote up here real quick. It was hilarious. Oh, DeGeneres. Anything can happen, so many different possibilities. Possibility number one is 12 Years a Slave wins Best Picture. Possibility number two, you're all racist. Which was just hilarious.
Right.
And everybody in the crowd, all the Hollywood lefties were in the crowd, laughed, and I mean, it was hilarious. And huge applause.
It's kind of funny, too, because when she first said it, it was very quiet, briefly.
Yeah.
And then the applause and the laughter just started kind of raising, and it got really, like you said, it became very loud, and they were very responsive. And you have to wonder what was going through their minds initially. I'm picturing them, were we just insulted? She couldn't have been directing that at us, right?
But, I mean, how do you not laugh at that, even if you're in the middle
exactly.
of it? Exactly. How do
and
you not laugh at
that? That's profoundly true. And, you know, I don't know if you I'm sure you did, but saw this, but there was a lot of graffiti showing up about Obama and stuff on the streets and stuff in California prior to the Oscars leading up to it. It was very negative, which is kind of a positive thing.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I did get something over the feed, and I didn't pull the story up, but something, I guess maybe on Fox, Obama's approval ratings are like at the worst level that they've ever been. Let me see if I can bring it up.
Well, it couldn't be because he's letting Putin beat the snot out of him in the public arena. It couldn't be that China is siding with Russia and they own all of our debt and Obama's sitting there with his thumb in his mouth.
Oh,
it couldn't
was a
be that we're being led into World War III. Anyway.
Well, I mean, okay, so only the people that are paying attention, only the political junkies really understand all of that. But I mean, they're polling people that don't pay attention, and his numbers are really, really low. Let's see if I just love to be able to find this up. 16% of voters think life for Rasmussen employment. See the trends. Daily presidential tracking poll. Obama's job approval. No, I can't find it. Oh, shut up. Pop-up ads, I hate them.
We'll find it later.
But that, I mean, just amazing. And there was a
it
meme. I'm gonna post a meme on Culture Vigilante, and it's a picture. It's a character of Obama hung up on a school locker, dangling. A bully hung him up on his school locker, and Putin is stomping down the hallway and says, this is what Obama and Putin would have been like in high school. Because, I mean, Putin is just bullying him to death. And
that would be good.
It's
would be
hilarious.
Good. I'd like to see that.
It is.
Can't wait for that one, Lisa.
Yeah. Go to Culture Vigilante on Facebook and find that meme, and we'll put that up there. Okay. We got a lot of stuff going on tonight. We're going to have Mike Donnelly from HSLDA on to talk to us about the Romica. The Romica case. Big news, huge victory, I think mainly because the pushback from the folks helped move that one along, I hope. And we have a lot of other stuff, great stuff to talk about tonight, too. So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried...
You live here?
Yes.
Well, maybe you know what a zombie is.
When a person dies and is buried, it seems there's certain voodoo priests who have the power to bring him back to life.
Horrible.
It's worse than horrible because a zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for GrassFire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
I've got a feeling that the tide is turning.
His life show deal.
dead, for peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
We're back. You're listening to Culture Vigilante. This is Lisa Payne Nager, and I'm with Sidney McGee. And tonight, we have on the phone with us Mr. Mike Donnelly. He is the Director of International Relations with HSLDA, that's Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And he and his friends at parentalrights.org have been feverishly working on this case that we've been talking about, the Romaika family, the homeschooling family from Germany who came here several years ago legally to escape religious persecution in their country. And we have some major developments in that case, and he's here to talk to us about that tonight. Thanks for agreeing to come on tonight, Mr. Donnelly. We really appreciate your time.
Glad to be with you, Lisa.
Okay, there are a lot of questions. I mean, first of all, why don't you give us just a real quick short background about this case and tell us what happened this week.
Sure. Well, in 2008, the Romaika family left Germany under threat of crushing fines, loss of custody of their children, jail sentences, just because they wanted to homeschool their children, something that the German authorities just simply don't tolerate. They came here. They won political asylum in 2010. A federal immigration judge granted them asylum and said that the United States should be a refuge for them. But the Obama administration appealed that decision and eventually ended up revoking the asylum. We appealed to the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, who rejected our arguments, and then the Supreme Court on Monday of this week denied our case and said they weren't going to hear it. So we were feeling kind of down about that.
Right.
But just 24 hours later, yesterday, later in the morning, we got a notice, or actually a phone call from the Department of Homeland Security, who are responsible for handling immigration issues and deportations and things of that nature, and they told us that the Romaikas were being granted an indefinite sort of a deferred action status, basically saying that they could stay in the country indefinitely on good behavior. So we're very happy about that. It's a tremendous, tremendous result. We're very thankful and thank all those who supported the family and have been supporting us. And it's just it's an amazing, amazing thing.
It's truly amazing because I was just devastated when I heard the results of the Supreme Court decision. And I don't know if you can answer this question, but how does the Supreme Court not take a case like this?
Well, Lisa, you know, the Supreme Court gets asked to take about 10,000 cases every year, and they can only hear between 80 and 100. And so they are extremely picky. And while this was a good case, we feel it was a good case, and we know there was at least one justice on the court who was interested in hearing the case, you need four votes. And there weren't four votes on the court to hear the case, so they declined to hear it. And it's unfortunate, but at the end of the day, honestly, even if we had won at the Supreme Court, and that would have been possible, I think, but even if we had won, it would have simply meant that we would have been continuing our battles in court because the court would have simply sent the case back to the Sixth Circuit. We would have had to go back for more argument, possibly even all the way back down to the immigration judge level, and we would have been starting it all over again. And so although this is an indefinite and somewhat of an uncertain status, it's the end of fighting for the Romaikas, and the result is they get to stay, which is ultimately what the goal was.
Yeah, very happy for them, and I think, you know, ultimately, I think it is. It's a great answer for them. Okay, so I'm just kind of dumbfounded by the turn of events.
You're not the only one.
It's the Department of Homeland Security fighting tooth and nail to get these very good people out of the country, these very lawfully immigrants.
Well, that was the Department of Justice.
Oh, okay. So
the Department of Justice that was opposing the asylum grant.
Okay.
So there are two different parts of the administration at issue here.
Okay, well, that maybe answer some questions. So how does this cross over? How does the Department of Homeland Security step in and make this justification?
Well, they don't have to make a justification, and they haven't made a justification. They simply told us that they were going to grant the Romaikis deferred action status. The Romaikas already had deferred action status. When we lost at the immigration Board of Immigration Appeals, that court had ordered the Romeikis to be removed from the country, to be deported. And we asked the Department of Homeland Security, Customs Immigration Enforcement Division, to grant them a stay while we were following, court appeals and things of that nature, and they did. And then we applied for a renewal of that status, and yesterday is when they granted it on an indefinite basis. So as long as Romeikis, are good on good behavior, which there's no doubt that they will be, there's no reason to believe that the department is going to take any action against them to remove them and send them back to Germany, where if they were sent back to Germany, they would face very harsh treatment from the German authorities.
So what does that mean, as long as they're on good behavior? Traffic tickets?
Serious misdemeanors, felonies, things of that nature. Not traffic tickets.
So they're not teetering on the edge, short of any huge disaster turn of events in their life. They're pretty much safe forever.
Well, it's not a permanent grant. It is a indefinite grant. And so, I think that's an important distinction to make, although there's no reason to believe that it would be revoked at any time. So it could end up being permanent, but it's not specifically or technically a permanent status.
Okay, so where do we go here from here, or where do the Romeikis go from here?
Fortunately, they stay put.
Do they apply for citizenship? What do they do?
No, they can't apply for citizenship. This is not the kind of status where you get to apply for citizenship. And, this is a very faithful, courageous family. They didn't come to America because they wanted to live in America. They had a great life back in Germany. They had their family and friends, and things were going fine for them, generally speaking, except for the fact that the authorities wouldn't let them homeschool. And so that wasn't why they came to America. They came here for freedom, for liberty. The reasons that, a lot of people, want to come here. And they're going to get to stay. And all they ever wanted was to be left alone, to bring up their children according to their convictions. And they know that their citizenship, as they told me, yesterday when I told them the news, they said, our citizenship is in heaven. And, they're Christians. And, they said, no matter, even if the U.S. had told us to leave, we would have been happy to go wherever God led us to be able to go and live peacefully to homeschool our kids. So they're just very happy, very thankful, very grateful to the American people for the support that they've been given and glad that they're going to be able to allow to stay.
Yeah, and absolutely. Okay, so they've gotten a pass. Things are good for them. They can go off into the foreseeable future and take care of their children and keep their family closely knit, and that's all good. This is all going to kind of fade out of the public view now, which I think is exactly what the federal government wants. I don't think Eric Holder wants to deal with this anymore. So, I mean, is there anything that...
You don't think so?
For now. And so, but to maintain the support for the Romeikis, there's no doubt, and I don't know that you would deny either, that this public scrutiny was part of the decision to, get this taken care of. Leaves the public view, how do we make sure that the Romeikis stay safe and they can continue to raise their family?
Well, I can guarantee you that the Homeschool Legal Defense Association will be continuing to work with the Romeika family. I mean, there are still issues that we're going to have to deal with as their children turn 18 and things of that nature. There are some issues there that will have to be addressed. So we will be continuing to work for them and making sure that they are protected. And I guarantee you that if there is a whiff of action against them, people will be made aware of it, and the issue will be brought right back into the public sphere. And I'm sure that we've been so grateful for the support of so many millions of people who have voiced their opinion by signing petitions on the White House website, by sending emails, by praying for the family. It's just been a tremendous outpouring. It was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We were told by someone at Fox that that their story got over a million page views in 24 hours, and that's the first time that had ever happened.
That's the first good news that the people have had in a long time concerning the government.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just incredible. And, well, actually, no, this was a story about the Supreme Court denying their case.
Oh, really? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And so it just was amazing. The story really touched a chord with people. And, you can understand why when you look at what's happening in our country. To treat this family like that is just an un-American thing. And so that just makes the Department of Homeland Security's decision to grant them an indefinite status all the more enjoyable and appreciated.
Absolutely. So as far as this, I'm assuming next, we're onward to the fight against Common Core. And so as far as I kind of tie things together, maybe it's not necessarily tied together, but for the American government to grant these folks some kind of asylum, some kind of a stay so that they can continue their homeschool fight, does that strengthen our cause a little bit? Cindy and I are both homeschool moms. Does that strengthen our cause
That's
a little
great.
Bit to fight against this, this attack on parental rights and educational freedom?
I think the Romica case and the federal government's reaction in opposing asylum for this family, along with other things that are happening out there, point to the need for a sustained grassroots effort to protect the rights of parents to make decisions for their children. There's a lot of cases going on. There's this case out of Massachusetts, the Pelletier case, or just a lot of things in the news lately that show that, that the government is encroaching and intruding into the sphere of family. There are legislative battles going on in various states over issues of immunization and things of that nature, where, some majorities, like in Colorado, for example, and Minnesota, trying to make it more difficult for families to get personal exemptions if they have a conviction against immunization, for example. So there are forces that are at work trying to intrude on the family, to make it harder for parents to make legitimate decisions for their children. So that, these cases and these issues really need attention, and I'm so glad that you guys are there shining a light on these issues and encouraging people to stay informed and to take action. That is so important.
Well, we would like to thank you, Mike Donnelly, and the folks at HSLDA and parentalrights.org for all of the work that you've done in standing up for these folks. I mean, I just can't imagine what it would have been like for them to have tried to deal with this subject without some good support system back there, out there to help them through it. Thank you so much.
Well, we couldn't do it without folks like you doing what you do every day. So keep up the good work, and thank you for your interest in the story. And God bless you and in your homeschooling journey.
Thank you, and to you. And where can folks get involved and stay engaged?
Well, of course, we encourage homeschooling families to join HSLDA. Their membership support allows us to do the things that we do to protect our freedoms here in America, but also to advance freedom around the world. There's a lot of forces at work that want to restrict our freedom, that want to control us, and you need watchmen on the wall. You need guardians of liberty, and that's what HSLDA is. We're in the battle with a lot of good other organizations that are worthy of support, but for homeschoolers, there's only one organization, that's HSLDA, so we encourage people to join with us. They can go to hslda.org and click join. If they're not homeschoolers or finished homeschooling, they can certainly make a donation to the Homeschool Freedom Fund, which is helping to, defend the Romicas and other families like them.
Excellent. Thank you, Mike Donnelly, HSLDA, and parentalrights.org for all the work that you've done. We hope that you'll come back and keep us informed on all the updates that are involved in the Romicas and other cases. Thanks.
You betcha. Anytime.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, and Cindy and I will be right back.
It really is time for the people of America to take up pitchforks.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
We're back. This is Lisa Payne Nager. I'm here with Cindy McGee. You're listening to Culture Vigilante on Missouri Grassroots Radio. And I just want to take a minute to encourage you to go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the Secret Santa tab. I've been playing our 2013 Secret Santa commercial. I'm going to make a new 2014 Secret Santa commercial. Missouri Grassroots Coalition decided at the inception of our organization to try to find at least one way that we can kind of give back to the community, and our Secret Santa initiative is the way that we're doing that. It's a nonpartisan issue. What we're trying to do is collect funds so that we can go to different places across the state, help different families across the state of Missouri to provide a Christmas for their kids if they are struggling financially. So what we do is we go and we pay off the layaway accounts with toys in them on Christmas Eve so that they can come pick those toys up and kind of keep the magic of Christmas alive for those young kids. Because the economy's not been good. I'm sorry?
It's an awesome cause.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, you know, I did it year before last, and it was really great to be able to go out. And the people are so appreciative because people are struggling out there. I mean, they were struggling 2 years ago. They were really struggling last year. And people are really, we're all here banting about the politics of the day. But the kids are innocents, you know, and they're the ones that, you know, the families that are just getting affected by this. It's just terrible. The economy is bad. A lot more people aren't working than the government is telling you, and people are out of jobs, and it's just hard. And so it was just great to be able to do that for some families across the state here. So if you have the opportunity, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. There's a Secret Santa tab at the top of the page. Click it, and we would be happy to accept any donation, any size donation, large or small. If everybody just sent us a dollar, we would have more than enough money to be able to go across the state and do this. PayPal, check, or money order. We don't care. We're easy to deal with, so send us a few dollars, and hopefully by Christmas we'll have enough money to be able to do the Secret Santa initiative here again. Anyway, wow, okay, so in a few minutes we are going to have Lee Stranahan. He's a Breitbart contributor. The folks at Politichicks.tv were tweeting out and posting on Facebook. There's an initiative. Oh, and I could complain about this all day. Because you know, Cindy, how I feel about these situations. But while the grassroots has been fighting against bureaucracy, we have, in some cases, not all cases, in some cases, become our own bureaucracy, and bureaucracies become corrupt. Mm-hmm. So Lee Stranahan's going to be on with us in a few minutes to talk about something he found out about TeaParty.net, an organization that's raised over $3 million, and just exactly where that money's going. Okay, so let's backtrack before he gets on the air and he doesn't hear what I'm saying. I am so sick and tired of trying to convince people that they have to be the stewards of their own actions. And, I mean, that's what the conservative movement is all about. You cannot just blindly believe what people tell you, because they know how to speak conservative speak. You have got to really vet these people out. And Lee's going to come on and talk about how this organization has been misdirecting your money that you've been donating to fight the corruption of government, and you know, and they're falling into it on their own. It just,
right.
You know, we talk about it with Yankee Doodle legislation every opportunity that we get. You know, there are folks out there who understand. There's a new language in the world. It's called conservative speak, and politicians have learned how to do it. They know exactly how to tell you what you want to hear. And most people blindly follow that. I told Cindy before we went on the air, I just got Netflix. I got rid of my cable TV, got an antenna, got Apple TV. So now I'm entering the world of all of these great shows that I was missing before. And I've been watching House of Cards. Oh, perfect show to demonstrate about how politicians play people. And conservatives are absolutely in line for being played all of the time. So, anyway, I'm on my soapbox.
You know, well, no, and you know, Lisa, you're right, because when we rose up, what's it been now, 5 years ago?
Yeah.
The Tea Party was first, yeah. and people stood up and they said, we've had enough of bureaucracy, we've mm-hmm. had enough of these politicians on both sides of the aisle, and now we have these millions of dollars being donated to these pseudo Tea Party organizations. And people are still not taking ownership of their responsibility
exactly.
to vet these people and give their money where they really feel it needs to be given. Instead, they're giving it to something that just calls itself, put the name Tea Party on it, and they'll give it to you. And we can't do that, folks. We've got to take ownership of our government, and that means you need to responsibly look at the candidates who are running, be informed. Yes, it takes time. Yes, it's not fun, but if you want to save your country, it's only going to happen if you take ownership and if you take the time to vet this out and put your money where it's really going to do some good. And you know what? If you give your money to somebody that stabs you in the back, then you can at least pop a letter off to them and let them know what you think of it. But instead, we're letting these organizations mm-hmm. make these decisions for us. We've got to stop it. That's just my two cents first.
Well, I agree. And, you know, I've always been a proponent that real Tea Party, real grassroots, you don't need to, I mean, we've been real good at doing that here in St. Louis where I live, but you do not need rallies. You know, you do not need expensive brochures and business cards. And I mean, all you really need is to understand social media and you need to vote. And that's the thing. It's about education. It's not about flashy T-shirts. It's not about flashy Tea Party rallies anymore. I mean, we are kind of beyond that. And you don't need to be donating gazillions of dollars to these organizations, you know, to get your word out. What you need to do is you need to go to the polls and vote. Your power is with your vote. It has always been with your vote. It will always be with your vote. You know, the lobbyists, whatever, all you really need is great social media and information to give you the information you need so that you can go out and cast your vote. And I'll tell you, Lee Stranahan's really great on Twitter. The man is just like a Twitter fiend. I was trying to follow some of his Twitter feed the other day, and he just like snaps it out of there faster than I can read it. Anyway, we do have him on the line. I think we're going to bring him on right now. Lee Stranahan, he is a Breitbart contributor, and you can follow him at Stranahan or LeeStranahan.com. Mr. Stranahan, thanks for being with me tonight.
Okay, thanks very much for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay, so we were talking a little bit before you got in the air. You stumbled across an issue, and I found out about it through Politichicks.tv, that maybe some of our money that we're sending to these great Tea Party organizations, or we think they're great, is maybe not being used for our benefit. What happened, and how did you find out about it?
Well, okay, so I was working on stories for Breitbart Texas about the Steve Stockman campaign. And Steve Stockman's a representative, and if you follow him on Facebook or watch what he says, it's exactly what you said before. If you listen to his rhetoric, you'd think, well, he's great. You know, he's boldly standing up against Obama. He seems like he's like on the right side of all these issues. He's bold and everything else. But as I started to look into it, I noticed a lot of irregularities, including deceptive and a history of deceptive and illegal campaign activity on his part.
Really?
And yes, and it's for instance, he was fined $40,000. Stockman was a representative in the 90s from, I think, 95 to 97. And he could be 93 to 95, something like that, but right in that period. And I think it was 93 to 95 as I think about it. But anyway, he, in the mid-90s when he was a congressman, he sent out illegal, deceptive materials that was political material disguised as a newspaper. So if you saw it, it ostensibly just looked like a newspaper. And there was no paid-to announcement. The Federal Election Commission requires every piece of election material to say paid for by, you know, friends of Steve Stockman or people against Steve Stockman or whoever, right?
Right.
And that makes sense because you want to know who's paying for stuff. You know, otherwise, a Democrat could put out material that makes a Republican look bad, let's say, right? And you'd have no way of knowing. And we know that sort of stuff has happened. So Stockman put out these newspapers. There was no paid to, and they were called, like, you know, Southeast Texas Statesman or stuff like that. But they were really campaign materials. He was fined $40,000. So a couple of weeks ago in Houston and Austin, Texas, fake newspapers started showing up. And I had tracked that down, and I confirmed that it was a guy who's a longtime associate of Stockman's, who's worked with him for 20 years, who's been his business partner, and he was the person behind it. Then as I looked into Stockman, his treasurer was a guy named Dan Backer. And Dan's a guy who I've known through my, you know, I've been involved in conservative politics for about 3.5 years since I met Andrew Breitbart 3.5 years ago. So I've met Backer a couple times. But then as I started to look into who Stockman was paying money to, 70% or something like that, or 80% of the money, was going to groups, all these different groups that were set up out of Backer's office. So money would go to a group called, MSB Consulting or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd look at the address, it was Dan Backer's address. Then money would go to another group, it was Dan Backer's address. It would go to another group. So then I started looking up Dan Backer. I'm like, well, that's kind of weird. And then I found out that Dan is the treasurer of the what's called the TeaParty.net Leadership Fund. They have brought in, that group has brought in $3.5 million this cycle in small donations. That's a lot of money.
From grassroots folks?
Clearly from grassroots folks, because 95%+ of it was donations under $200.
Wow.
Which means regular people.
Right.
A lot of money. And I found out that less than 10% of that money had gone to actually doing stuff for candidates or apparently working on issues. Most of the money was raised through fundraising. And then I started following the money, right? So this was all public record stuff. And anybody could do it. I don't have access to any secret databases or anything. This is all public record stuff. But I got to point out that if you were a regular person, you'd never do this. Mm-hmm. And the reason why is it's tedious, it's boring, it takes a long time. I do it because I'm a writer and a researcher. But if I just had a regular job, you know, like I've had in the past, there's no way I could do this. There's just no way. So as I tracked the money from that Tea Party group, I found out that Tea Party group had given less than $100,000 to help candidates out. And of that, so don't forget, this is the Tea Party.net Leadership Fund, right, TeaParty.net. And when I went to their donation pages, they say, help the Tea Party movement. That's what it says at the top in big letters. Help the Tea Party movement. And then, like, we know, we know times are tough, but every bit you give helps the Tea Party movement. Well, I found out that of the under $100,000 that actually given to candidates, $20,000, two $10,000 donations, went to Tea Party favorite candidates, Mitch McConnell and Sean Cornyn. In other words, two of the
so what
top
are they doing?
Two guys, in the GOP establishment.
Yeah.
And then I found out that they had also given $1,500 to a guy named David Price, who's the most, it's on his Wikipedia page, the most liberal white Democrat. In other words, there are black Democrats who might be more liberal than him. But he's the most liberal white Democrat in North Carolina.
How does that happen?
Which part? Of them getting money or the them spending the money?
Yeah, exactly.
The spending the money happens because nobody has the time to go through and research all this stuff.
There's no oversight.
That's part of it. And apparently, so when I started writing about this on Twitter and pointing out these things and linking to stuff, because I'm not a take my word for it kind of person, right?
Right.
I'm not a, oh, just trust me. I'm a Breitbart protege. I'm going to prove the things. So I kept linking and linking and linking. And people were going nuts about this. But it's proven. It's all right there. This is all public information. But so you ask how they get away with it. The other way they get away with it is that apparently no one wants to call them out on it. And I've had serious pushback in ways that I can't quite talk about yet. But serious pushback, mostly people going, yeah, this is awesome. Point this out because this is really bad. But I've had some serious pushback. And look, there's this thing going on that I've come to term the shadow establishment, right? So,
okay, what is
the
shadow establishment?
Well, if I said to you there's like a establishment political culture, you'd go, well, yeah, of course, I know that. It's
sure.
Mitch McConnell, it's you know,
right. John Boehner,
whatever, right?
Yeah.
But if I said to you there's a shadow establishment, well, what's that? What it is these groups, like Rapid Response Television. Do you know who they are?
No. I've heard of them.
See? Right? And you're a more politically astute person than the average citizen. You follow this stuff. You're a crazy person like me who gets involved in politics. Most people, you know, they just don't, right? And so I started to look into these groups, Campaign Solutions. Do you know who they are? They're another one. So there's all these groups that are multi-million dollar companies who their whole business is fundraising, doing direct mail, right? All of these things. So that's part of the establishment. And they're driven by mailing list, massive mailing list. And so if I said to you, do you know who Sabre Communications is? You heard of them?
No.
Okay, right. You shouldn't have. Now, Sabre Communications is a company that was paid, for instance, $7 million by the Ron Paul campaign in 2012. They were paid by Stockman. They're paid by a lot of people because they have mailing lists, right? They've built
up
these giant mailing lists.
Sure.
And if you looked at what they were claimed to be promoting, you'd go, well, okay, these guys are great. I like these guys. I'm, you know, because they'll go down the line. So pro-life, pro-gun, right? But they certainly know how to talk conservative. But then you start to look into it a little bit, and it's like the Tea Party that – here's the thing. If the Tea Party group wants to give money to Cornyn and McConnell, that's fine. I don't care. But just tell people. just tell people.
Well, so this shadow establishment, let's talk about that a little bit because I'm thinking – I'm going off on my tinfoil hat stuff again, but – you know, I'm from St. Louis. There, you know, a lot of the Tea Party,
right.
you know, grew. It was almost born here. You know, there was a lot of the Tea Party establishment.
Yeah, right. Yes.
Okay, so we were very strong here. And what I saw happen here in St. Louis was that we had a great Tea Party. We had a lot of people here, very strong. You know, we did very well. And immediately, the establishment got a rash and decided, you know, we can't have this going on. We got to contain these folks. So they did a lot of things to infiltrate the grassroots movement and they had to calm us down and shut us up and control us. So they infiltrated us and they, you know, made deals with us and, you know, co-opted us in a lot of ways. So I'm drawing that parallel with what's going on here obviously this is an establishment, a shadow establishment, maybe, correct me if I'm wrong, a shadow establishment organization that is raising money from grassroots folks, a lot, and they, if they got that much money in small donations, they've sucked a lot of people in.
Yes.
And then they're funneling it to establishment candidates.
Well, I'm about to put up an article on leafstranahan.com, my site, that I go into detail on how they get this. And I'm using an example. I think they've done it with Sarah Palin, too. But I'm using the example of a non-Tea Party candidate, Newt Gingrich, only because I have documentary proof on what happened there. So there's a PAC, and the treasurer is this guy, Dan Backer, again. He's the treasurer of about 30 groups. And so they have a site called Draft Newt 2014. Draft Newt Gingrich. I think Newt, do you think Newt Gingrich should be the next senator from blah, blah, blah? Sign here. Sign the petition and donate, right? So they've only made a few $1,000 in signatures. but, you know, that's it. They've only made a few thousand. But don't forget, he's got 30 of these groups. But they got over 10,000 signatures. So this mailing list thing, it's a profitable operation. I will tell you that a very well-known candidate who's associated with the Tea Party, and I know this on background, I'm not going to name who it is, but it's somebody who everybody would know. Their mailing list, they were doing rentals on that. And this candidate was personally netting $24,000 a month from renting out their mailing list. Now, this is a sitting congressperson.
And going to his personal coffers or his campaign coffers? Or, yeah, personal or campaign coffers?
I have been told it was going to them personally. Because here's the thing. At a certain point, here's the way they do this, right? So it's not legal if I'm a candidate. I can't take the money and go on a vacation to Barbados, right?
Right.
But I can take the money and have my leadership PAC conference in Barbados. Tell me the difference.
So here's another kind of fine line I'm drawing here. So, I mean, I've been involved in small-scale campaigns here where I live, and we know that parties, they compile lists. They compile mailing lists,
yes,
and they sell those lists
yes.
to candidates. I mean, I understand that is a business. And campaign consultants, they live and die by these lists that they compile.
That's right.
So
yes.
is what you're saying that a congressperson is creating a business, a secondary private business out of selling their campaign lists that they compile during campaigns, is that legal? Can you do that?
I think it probably is illegal. I don't think it's illegal. And that's just the problem, right? This is just the problem. Because if you want to know why the actual ideals of the Tea Party aren't advancing as rapidly as you might think they would be based on the enthusiasm that was clearly there 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is, and that's why I call it the shadow establishment, there's a group of people who are professional political people. And the reason I ask you if you heard of this group or that group is nobody knows who these people are. Nobody.
Right.
These are names that are not household names. So it's very easy for us to sit there and go, well, John Boehner's the problem. And John Boehner is a problem,
is
right?
A problem.
So he's clearly a problem. But what's keeping him in power? What's keeping McConnell in power? What's keeping all these guys? We have this here in Texas, right? A regular, real grassroots candidate has no hope. I'm telling you that flat out. They have no hope because there's a system that's working against them. So we had a guy in Texas, Duane Stovall. I'm not getting into an advocacy position, but I'm saying that he was a real grassroots candidate. He drove around to talk to people, right? So Steve Stockman enters the race, and Stockman's got gigantic lists and a lot of money behind him, and it's money you don't see. Well, Stovall's campaign and the other 11 people who ran, right, they literally don't know what hits them. And so what happens is suddenly they see all this rotten stuff, and I've seen it happen. I've talked to candidates all across the country, good people, regular people, who they dip their toe in politics and discover it's such a horrible cesspool that's stacked against them that then they leave politics. Let's talk about the $3.5 million that they raised, of which 90% was administration fundraising. That's the problem with that, is that's $3 million that could have gone elsewhere. You see my point? Like,
sure.
It's not just that the money's gone. It's that the money's not going to fund actual grassroots activities or actual grassroots candidates or actual grassroots issues. And I've talked to so many people who are involved in Tea Party politics on some level as a vendor. Like, let's say they make videos or something like that. They all tell me, and I can tell you this too, there's no money. Another example I give is this same Dan Backer. He's the treasurer for a group called Stop Hillary. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at the expenditures of that group, they've done almost nothing on media to stop Hillary. It's all gone to administration and fundraising. Now, if you look at the pro-Hillary group called Ready for Hillary, and I compared these two, this is a pro-Hillary group that the Democrats have, right? You know what? Their money is going to media. Their money is going to spreading the word about Hillary. You see what I'm saying? So,
wow.
So all you have to do is look at the graphs. I would recommend the site Open Secrets. If you go to just Google Open Secrets,
mm-hmm.
they put all the stuff up there, and there's graphs of stuff. You can see the difference between the anti-Hillary group and the pro-Hillary group. And so the anti-Hillary money is being literally thrown down the sewer, whereas the pro-Hillary money, and I'm not, look, obviously people should be paid. Obviously they're going to have attorneys. Obviously fundraising costs money. Everyone knows that. But all you have to do is compare the graphs, and you'll see that most of the Ready for Hillary money is actually being spent on media to change people's minds, not going to lawyers, not going to a small group of consultants. And if that's what's going to happen, we're going to lose.
So who's managing these? Exactly. So you've got all of these extraneous groups out there. Who's pulling the strings directing these groups?
Well,
because you got money going to media, you got money going to fundraising. Somebody's driving a bus somewhere. No?
You're right. I found a few different ways that people are doing this sort of shenanigans. And typically it's very small groups of people who keep the money going between themselves. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So
no,
the Tea Party's become an industry.
I mean, it's absolutely become an industry. And that's one of the things Andrew Breitbart said to me at the last CPAC he was at. We were walking around together, and Andrew was just saying, he said, it really bothers me. He said, you know, there are some people who are really making money off of the Tea Party. And he said, it really bothers me. He said, it really bugs me. And I didn't know exactly who he meant or what he was talking about at the time. And obviously we didn't get a chance to talk about it because he was gone, a month later.
Right.
But we, when you look at it, for instance, and I got to be clear here, I'm not accusing anybody of illegal behavior. But when I look at the 30 groups that Dan Backer is the treasurer of, for instance, there's a clear pattern that emerges of most of the money staying within that group of people where he's one of the top expenditures, and that's about it. And like I say, this draft Newt thing, if you go, the reason I brought that up is Newt Gingrich sent them a cease and desist letter, his attorneys. Said,
really?
You're not up? Yes. Yeah, I'm going to post this on LeeTurnIn.com. He's, and I haven't been able to find if Sarah Palin's done a similar thing. But here's what's interesting. He sent a cease and desist letter about a year ago. The site's still up. They're still collecting signatures. Because a person who's a political insider who works for a top-tier household name Republican senator, I was talking to them about this off the record. And they said, people tried to do that with me, with my candidate, and I sent them a cease and desist letter. And so I asked him, I said, well, does it work? Does that stop them? He's like, well, it usually does. He said, but, you know. I said, well, does it have any legal force? He said, no, not really, you know. So what these guys know, if they're attorneys, right, is that I can say, you know, draft Ted Cruz. I can set that up. I can put a picture of Ted Cruz up. He's a public figure. And I can say, Ted Cruz is the man for our thing. Sign here if you want him to run for president. Now, what's the harm, right? You like Ted Cruz. You're just mm-hmm. like, oh, great, I'll give you my name and address. But what's happening is I'm doing that in order to build a mailing list. And I'm going to use that mailing list, and I'm going to hit it. And if I have a big enough mailing list of 1 million people, 2 million people, even if I get 1%, I can raise a tremendous amount of money. And I'm not telling them I'm going to do anything. I don't say, sign this petition and we'll send, Ted Cruz will get, you know, 75 cents out of every dollar we raise or whatever. None of it goes to Ted Cruz. So this draft Newt thing, none of the money's going to Newt. None of the list. And they got 10,000 signatures at least, because that's what Dan Backer says in this article I'll be posting. He says, we're going to send the 10,000 signatures to Newt. Well, Newt doesn't need the 10,000 signatures. And by the way, they do this on Benghazi. They do this on any issue. If I was one of these people trying to scheme people right now, I could put up a website for $10, and I could do the website in about an hour. I'm not joking. $10 for the domain. I'd be like, stand up to Russia, right? And I'd have a picture of the Ukraine thing, and I'd say, you know, Barack Obama is capitulating to the Russians. I thought we'd won the Cold War. Please help us stand up, right? Blah, blah, blah. Give me your name and address. Well, that's a hot issue right now, right? Like, I would get people to sign up for that. And I'd be building my list. But guess what? I'm going to do nothing whatsoever, because I'm not even promising to actually help the issue. Nothing. And that's what you see in site after site after site that I've put up there. They never actually promise to do anything. So it's perfectly legal. It's not even fraud. I'm not saying, give me $10 and I'll help Ukrainian refugees. I'm just saying, give me money. You see?
So, yeah, and then they sell the list to make money on the list.
Then they sell the list, yep, and they use the list. And then they use the list for their own candidates. And you're not one of them. You see what I'm saying? So
right.
This is why I say it's just that.
Wow.
Because I know for a fact that there are groups. The National Right to Work Committee is another one of them. And they're different than the operation I've been talking about. But the National Right to Work Committee, in their case, they were recruiting candidates. They would recruit candidates. So they'd say, hey, we want you to run. And don't worry about it. We'll take care of it for you. What this guy, Mike Rothfeld, he's head of Sabre, he said this about the Ron Paul campaign. He said, well, Ron Paul can run his campaign and we'll run ours. What he means by that is, I don't care. See, if I'm trying to make money off of this, Sarah Palin or whoever can do whatever they want to do. But if I put up a draft Sarah page, I'm going to get people signing up. And there's nothing Sarah can do to stop me. Again, Newt Gingrich put a cease and desist up, and the site's still up there right now. It's still up there. So that means that because it's a lawyer behind it, they know that they can't stop them. So really the only way we have to combat this is by trying to get the word out. And the problem with trying to get the word out is that these guys have giant mailing lists. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, and they literally, I mean, one of the people who's an insider on this told me off the record, he called me one morning, he said, you know these groups lead, you know they don't care about you, right? And I said, well, what do you mean? He said, look, they don't care about the press. They think that the press, and I don't care who it is, the New York Times or Breitbart, doesn't make any difference, can say whatever they want to say, but they're going to have their list. And in fact, if, let's say the New York Times tried to expose this, okay, not me, okay, but they did exactly the same story that I'm doing. Pretend it's an unbiased, exactly the same story. These groups would come up and go, did you see what the New York Times said about us? Send $5, $10, $20 right now to help us fight leftist media and blah, 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 blah. And these groups largely target older people. The guy who started TeaParty.net, Todd Serafati, I can't pronounce his last name properly, but people get my name wrong all the time. But Todd's business, he was a broker in mailing lists for the reverse mortgage industry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he did. Well, now who's the market for the reverse mortgage industry? Right.
Right.
It's not young people.
It's the old folks.
It's grandma and grandpa. It's grandma and grandpa. Right. And so he had these giant lists. And by the way, Stockman's still renting lists from this guy, from his company that deals in mortgage lists. So he knew how to make money with mailing lists. And he had this big list of largely elderly people, I'm sure. That's an assumption on my part based on the fact he was doing the reverse mortgage business. And that's who started TeaParty.net. He saw what was happening with the Tea Party, saw that it was a leaderless movement, and saw that if you just say, support the Tea Party movement, and then, see, there's a lot of people, older people especially, who they mm-hmm. get their news from their email inbox in the morning.
Right.
Right? It's whatever they see in the mail. And so, and this is why I get so personally angry about it, because when I think about veterans in baseball caps and their wives opening up the email, they're justly concerned about every issue that you and I would be concerned about, whether it's immigration or gun
right.
rights or down the line, right? And
this is amazing.
Good, you're a grassroots person. You know that these are good people, right?
Right.
It's very hard for good people to conceive that somebody who's saying the right things might not be a good person too.
Exactly.
You see what I mean? This is how they get taken advantage of.
Exactly.
And it's infuriating to me. So.
But
yeah.
Lee, this is Cindy. I'm sitting with Lisa tonight. Something that occurs to me, I've been involved with the Tea Party from the get-go also. One of the things that just boggles my mind about this is, in addition to everything else you've said, it occurs to me that there are a lot of good people out here who want to be involved, want to change the course that things are on. They fall
yep.
prey to one of these petitions, they sign it, they send money, and they're doing this a lot. They're doing this a
yep.
lot to make a difference. And then they come away feeling like, I'm in the fight. I'm doing everything I can. I'm giving my hard-earned money. For a lot of older people, it's money from a fixed income. And they're
right.
being grossly abused and misused.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
am I off the wall here?
No.
I mean,
no,
that's
no,
the
no,
other
I...
tragedy in this, is that we've got so many people that want to be involved. They're looking for a way, and they're being led down
the
yellow
brick
road.
Right.
And yes, and that's why I call it a shadow establishment, because it's systemic. In other words, there are multi-million-dollar companies that do fundraising, that rely on lists and everything else, you see? And so since people aren't thinking of them, when they think of McConnell or Boehner as the target, and then they go, huh, gee, why? Well, it looks like they're still in power. Why is that? And the reason why it is because, like you say, all the money and the time is getting sucked, just literally thrown down the sewer. But these companies, when I say they're multi-million dollar companies, what I'm trying to point out there is they have every incentive in the world to keep these sort of scams going.
Mm-hmm.
There are people whose personal fortunes and daily livelihoods depend on this structure of fundraising and everything. And as both an optimistic person and a Christian, I don't like to just point things out for negative. I try to think of a positive solution and a way out of this. And part of my drive on this stuff is I think, I've been talking to a few friends of mine praying over this, and I think one of the things is my quickie slogan is policy is not enough. In other words, I am no longer judging candidates or organizations by what they say they're in favor of. You know the difference between, you know, walking the walk and talking the talk, right? So if there's a candidate and they are unethical in the way that they raise money or deceptive in the way that they're campaigning, I don't care what their stated policies are. And the way I've explained it is, if I saw a guy running out of a bank with a bunch of money in a bag and a gun and a ski mask over his head, and he jumped into a car, and, you know, it had a Reagan sticker on the back and a pro-Second Amendment thing, I wouldn't go, oh, well, that's okay.
A lot of people would.
I thought the guy robbing the bank was bad, but he's on our side, you know, so.
Yeah, he'll vote for the right guy when the time comes.
That's right. And the reality is, the reason people are being sold out over and over again is because you're dealing with candidates who aren't ethical. They're deceptive. So why let's just think about this cynically for a second. Pretend your only goal is to make money, and you're in Texas, right? And you want to make money in politics. I can speak for Texas because I live here and everybody knows about Texas, right? You don't make money or gain a foothold by running to the left of Cornyn as a Republican. Does that make sense? In other words, if you're going to run against Cornyn, you're not going to say, I'm the more moderate John Cornyn. No one in Texas is going to vote for you, you see? So
right. If
you're going to pander to people, the money isn't saying you're going to the right of John Cornyn. Oh, no, he's lax on immigration, I'll be tougher. He's lax on gun rights, I'll be tougher. He's lax on abortion, I'll be tougher. Blah, 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 blah. Now, that may be somebody's authentic position, but it doesn't take a genius to figure out that's where the money is in opposing John Cornyn. And that's just what's happened. People have figured out that that's where the money is. So that's where they go. And what you end up with is candidates who are more concerned about themselves and their own money and their own profit and stuff like that. And it's just a really bad system. I mean, I would highly recommend Peter Schweitzer's books, Throw Them All Out or Extortion, as well, where he talks about in his own way with his own research. Peter Schweitzer's done amazing work on the broad subject of the people don't know how bad. I mean, Washington is a business. It's a business like anything else. And people just don't realize all the different ways candidates can make money. It's not to their salary. There's a reason these candidates, if you look at them,
they all get rich.
Millionaires.
And
they all get rich. Where do they get rich? It's not from their salaries, which aren't that outrageous. You know, their salaries are like, moderately good. That's not how they become millionaires. It's because there's 100 ways for them to game the system. And if we're ever going to change anything, we need to smash the thing that's holding up the system. And that's all these other companies. You need to demand transparency of your candidates. You need to demand ethics in terms of not just, I'm not talking about like cheating on your wife ethics. You shouldn't do that too. But if a person's going to lie and be deceptive, they've lost me. Because I know if they're lying in, you know, their candidacy, they're lying. Why would I trust them with anything? They don't end up being good votes for us.
And you've found evidence of a very popular congressional candidate that's involved in this industry?
Are you talking about the one who I said I wouldn't say who they were?
Yes.
Yeah, you don't have to name it. I just wondered, has your research led you down that path? I don't want to put you in a bad space.
Yeah. I mean, here's what it is. I've had people who I've known personally, politicians, who I've known personally and admired, who I'm very disappointed in at this point. One example would be Michelle Bachmann. I've met Michelle. I've interviewed Michelle. I've been on a stage with her. She was one of Andrew's favorite politicians. And I've seen Michelle Bachmann engaged in activity that I consider ethically wrong, such as, for instance, lying about other Republicans who are trying to tell the truth about her and trying to destroy them, literally trying to destroy them. And it's extremely depressing to me because Michelle Bachmann's a person who I personally liked, have had, a minor, like I said, dealt with her, worked with her. Mm-hmm. And policy-wise, I think she's great on a lot of policies. That being said, I'm blame the sin, not the sin. Hate the sin, not the sinner, right? So the problem is that Washington politics are so bad that even good people, and I consider Bachmann, I think she got pulled into bad politics by running for president. Why did she run for president? It helped her build a list. It helped her make money. She was under a lot of personal pressure to run for president because once you're in a certain position as a politician, look what, and again, I'm not saying it's unethical, but look what happened to Mike Huckabee.
Mm-hmm.
Who was Mike Huckabee before he ran for president? He was never going to get a Fox TV gig or anything like that. He was an obscure ex-governor, right? I'm not knocking him, but that's who he was.
Right.
He runs for president, suddenly he's known. And you see it over and over and over again with people. Running for president is a career move. They don't have to win. Period. They don't have to win. They don't even have to do well. It's like 6 months to a year of free publicity that makes a person, they're in all these debates and they're everything else.
Wow.
This is a problem. And and it's a problem that you or I would like to think, well, if I were in that position, I'd do it differently. But you know what? I think it's a real systemic problem. And the only way to avoid it is for people to come clean about what the actual problems are. You know, here's the thing. What if people were telling you, you got to run for president, you got to run for president, and you had big major people saying, hey, you need to run, you need to run, this is important. And then you realize that there was a ton of money in it. In the case of Michelle Bachmann, there was areas where she was making money, but her campaign was engaged in illegal campaign activity, paying people. They paid a state senator named Ken Sorensen. He was getting $7,500 a month from the Bachmann campaign. That was against Iowa Senate rules. He was a senator. He's not supposed to get any money. Then he was stabbed. Then he stabbed Bachmann in the back. He was paid $100,000 by the Ron Paul campaign to jump ship. Now, this is an Iowa state senator who nobody outside of Iowa had ever heard of. And he got close to $200,000 in the Iowa campaign illegally. He's a Republican.
My God.
Think about that. Think about that. And this is a relatively obscure guy. And then there's minor stuff that happened, but it's not minor to the person. There was a mailing list. There was a woman who worked for Bachmann named Barb Hecke. She was the head of a homeschool group, real grassroots person. The Bachmann campaign, people inside the Bachmann campaign, stole the list off of her computer and used it for campaign purposes. And then she got blamed for taking the list. And the homeschool organization she was with, after 10 years of her working with them, expelled her from the group. And people in the Bachmann campaign knew about it. And she was literally coming to work crying every day, putting her head down on the desk, trying to figure out how the list had gotten off her personal computer. People in the Bachman campaign knew about it. Michelle Bachman knew about it and didn't say anything to her until after she dropped out of the caucuses. Now,
wow.
That's immoral. That's immoral on a it's not like robbing a bank or killing somebody, but this woman's life was
It would certainly
ruined.
Change the way that people would look at her if this was out there.
Yes. And Eddie, and by the way, it's out there. It's out there. There's a book about it. I've written about it. I have audio that I've released. It's up on YouTube, and it's gotten like 40 views or something, of this guy, Kent Sorensen, admitting on audio that people in the campaign knew about the theft of the list. He was secretly audio tagged. He says the campaign manager said to take the list.
Wow.
Right? Kent Sorensen was booted from office after an Iowa ethics investigation. It made news in Iowa. But what happens is, and I've had friends of mine, most of them were like, well, yeah, if she's done something wrong, you got to report it. But some of them have been like, why are you attacking Michelle Bachman? And I'm like, because there's clear, provable evidence of wrongdoing. And they're like, well, yeah, but I'm like, no. Like, there's no but. It's like there's clear, provable evidence of wrongdoing. And they're like, yeah, but you're biting the hand that feeds you. You're blah, blah, blah. And my whole point
mm-hmm.
is
it's
never going to get better ever. Never, ever. If we don't.
Right.
This is not about suicidally holding ourselves to impossible standards. You follow me? Like,
right.
I'm not one of those people who's like, you know what, if you had a drunk driving conviction 20 years ago or whatever, okay, you know, that was 20, you know, I'm not looking for angels with no, you know, with who's never done anything wrong.
Exactly, but we are trying to find people to go into positions of leadership who have a moral backbone. And I don't know how you find people with a moral backbone when there's never any consequence to the things that they, to these infringements that they commit during their campaigns. There's no consequence to reporting somebody.
Like in Stockman's case, he was arrested as a teenager for Valium or something like that, right? I don't care. But then he filed a lawsuit saying he was never arrested for it. Well, then there's proof he was arrested for it. So I don't, like I say, if you're arrested 20 years ago for drunk driving, fine. But if you try to destroy the people who point that out, that's wrong to me. So I don't care what you did 20 years ago. I care what you do today. Does that make sense? Like I'm okay with people having past or having history or stuff like that. But I'm not okay with people trying to destroy the people who are trying to point it out. Because the thing is, if you had a drunk driving conviction 20 years ago and someone brings it up in the debate and you go, you know what, I did have a drunk driving conviction 20 years ago. I haven't had it since then. I regret doing it and I'm sorry. You know what, if that's your response, I think most voters will go, yeah, okay. I don't care. Whatever. I don't care. You can get away with a lot with voters if you're honest about things. But
what about the ethics violations during campaigns? There's never a consequence to those violations.
There's never an electoral consequence. And I had this over and over. I'm reporting this stuff about Stockman, and people are like, well, you're in the bag for Cornyn. And I'm like, I am not in the bag for Cornyn.
Hmm.
Well, this is what happens, is people, they get so caught up in things that they're like, well, if you're against this candidate who I like, and I'm like, I'm pointing out a fact. If you think I'm wrong, please, I don't know how you could think that because here's the newspaper, but okay. I mean, in Cornyn's case, for instance, he was on record talking about his being in jail when he was a teenager. He talked about it in interviews. So case closed, right? Well, not for some people. And it's really, like I say, this is why good people the
don't
ideal of the founding fathers. Well, because the ideal of the Founding Fathers, and it was a good one, was like citizen politicians who would, you know, they'd have their farm, then maybe they'd run for office, they'd be in for a few years, and then go back to farming, right? That was the ideal of the Founders. When these companies exist, they need candidates. That's why they need somebody to run. And they need somebody to run to say the right things. And they know if they do that. In Stockman's case, he made money and he built a list. He got people to sign up. He helped build the list for people. He helped pay for things. And you know what? That's all he was trying to do. And in the meantime, he sucked the air out of the room for real Tea Party candidates and got all the press. And it's like I say, as somebody who, I'm very, cynical's not the right word, I'm very realistic right now. Until this problem of the system gets fixed, there's no way to fix things. Because as soon as that Tea Party candidate gets elected, they're going to get sucked into that system. You can see that with even Ted Cruz, who I think is one of the more straightforward guys. Ted Cruz is the grassroots outreach person for the NRSC, which is the establishment Republican group. And he did not come out publicly. He said, I'm not going to support anybody who's primarying another senator. Even Ted Cruz has to play by the rules. Even Rand Paul has to play by the rules. Rand Paul is tied tightly with Mitch McConnell right now, as tightly as you can be. Mitch McConnell's campaign chairman is Jesse Benton. Jesse Benton married into the Paul family. He lived in Rand Paul's basement. Jesse Benton is a campaign manager spokesperson. Jesse Benton made $1 million in the past year as a campaign chairman spokesperson for people like Rand Paul and Ron Paul and Mitch McConnell. $1 million. That's crazy. That's crazy.
That's amazing for
a campaign person to make that. But like I say, very few people, he's part of that establishment, and no one knows who Jesse Benton is. You know, if you Google him, you'll find some stuff. But no one knows who these people are.
So what's the answer for folks like you, for me, you know, Cindy, all of us grassroots folks out here? Don't go to these pop-up places and send our $5 and don't sign these lists. I mean, basically, really,
well,
all to abstain from it and just vote. Don't send money,
yeah,
just vote.
But here's the problem, is that you're going to lose.
Your candidate can't get the publicity.
That's right, and because you're up against people with massive amounts of resources who can do stuff like giant mailings. They know politics. They have these. Think of politics as marketing for a second, okay?
Right. It is marketing.
Because it is marketing, right? So if I said to you, I've got a great new soda pop, and it's great. It's awesome. And you're like, okay, well, I'm going to start a business. And you're like, well, how are you going to go against Coke and Pepsi? And I said, well, I'm just going to make great soda pop. You go like, well, okay, good luck. You're not going to do anything.
Nobody's going to drink
because you're going up against Coke and Pepsi. But if I said to you, here's my plan. We're going to give out free taste at every blah, 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 blah. Well, suddenly you're talking about something that costs a lot of money, right? So I think the power of the grassroots is that what I think is good organizations need to spring up that – focus on their transparency. You follow me? So I don't think it's enough for organizations, because by the way, these organizations I'm talking about, they aren't going to go away on their own. They're just not. They again, people's livelihoods are at stake, and they're making a lot of money. So they're not going to go away on their own. So I'm an Andrew Breitbart protege, right? So Andrew, some days he was a journalist, some days he was an activist. You know what I mean? Like he was a little of both. So I'm trying to do good, solid journalism on this. And then I'm thinking about what the activist solution is. on some of this stuff, and trying to figure out another thing. I mean, when I met Andrew, I was a liberal. I was writing for the Huffington Post. I'd done work for MoveOn. I worked with MoveOn, right? I made videos for MoveOn. Forget their politics for a second. Forget their ideology. MoveOn's a pretty good organization. What I mean by that is their money goes to putting, you know, if you give money to MoveOn, the message will get out. Does that make sense? Like,
mm-hmm.
if you can adamantly disagree with the message, as I do now, but I worked with them, and I know that if they said, we're raising money to make this video, they would raise money and they would make that video, and it would be on MSNBC that day. So they were getting the message out. There's no organization like that on the right now that I know of. There really isn't. And I talked to Andrew about that. I used to say, like, who's the MoveOn on the right? And he'd be like, there isn't one. So I'm sort of simultaneously going to do journalism and try to motivate people to start good organizations that aren't scammy, that are fully transparent, that say, you know, if you give money to us, 70% of the money, or 60, I don't even care, 60% of the money is going to go to the cause, and 40% is going to go for fundraising. And then you can decide, I don't want to do that. Or
right.
you can look at it and go, I don't know, okay, that's reasonable. Because look, fundraising costs, here's the deal, fundraising costs money. I don't expect that number to be zero for any group. You know what I mean? Like,
sure, you have administrative costs. You have to cover your overhead.
That's right. But I don't want 90% of it going, and I don't want it going to candidates
right.
who I'd never support in a million years. And so what I'm hoping is the next stage of growth in the Tea Party will be grassroots organizations that build into their organization some transparency and just are like, you know what, this is who we are, this is what we're doing. We formed this group and we do videos, or we do, you know, viral petition campaigns and blah, 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 blah. And then they say, like, so for instance, if I was going to start a group, I would urge people that, I would say, let's be transparent, and let's tell people, we have a mailing list, we rent it out, here's how much we rent it for, and we'll tell you who we rent the list to. Now, or we won't rent the list. But if we rent it to people, that way you can see, okay, they rented their list to Claire McCaskill. What's
mm-hmm.
up with that? Will they, and then they can answer for it. But right now
right.
there's no transparency, and I just think that's why I call these groups a shadow establishment, is because they really do live in the shadows. They're right there, but
mm-hmm.
they're hiding. And so, I
and
think
the bottom
the
line,
solution, yeah, better organizations.
The bottom line is if we're gonna demand, basically the grassroots and the Tea Party movement is demanding that kind of transparency and that kind of accountability from our elected, we should at least not be stupid enough to exempt our own Tea Party organizations from the same. Go ahead.
Well, no, I almost wish there was the Better Business Bureau stamp of approval or whatever.
Sure.
I wish there was a small group that would give the Tea Party stamp of approval, and it would have to be a completely transparent organization of like five people or whatever, who can just look at stuff and go, yeah, that's not a scam, and you know who it is and who they're doing. That would help a lot, too. Even that kind of thing would help. So people just go, this is a sort of certified non, you know.
Yeah, kind
okay
of a Tea Party Better Business Bureau. Right. Absolutely.
That's right. Yeah.
Wow. What a mess.
It is a mess. Yeah, it is a mess.
Don't you think there's going to have to be a lot of effort made to get the Tea Party to look this Leviathan in the eye and to recognize its presence and to be willing to deal with it, too? I mean, I may be stupid and ignorant myself. I mean, actually, I'm not. I do know that this exists. But how the problem is messaging it to get people to wake up to it and to understand that this is what's going on. That's your first You've got to got to get people to understand that this is what's happening.
What's been interesting is in the few days I've been tweeting this out, I've had people from Eric Erickson to Steven Crowder to a lot of regular people you've never heard of just going, this is awesome, keep it up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's like Erickson. Eric Erickson tonight said, this is an important story, keep going on it. On the other hand, I've had weird pushback from sources you wouldn't expect. And me personally, I'm in the Andrew Breitbart school of I'm not going to back down. And when someone tries to back me down, I just get more angry and more like, no, no, no. No, I'm not playing this game with you. So what I've noticed, though, is, you know, I used to, I've been a Christian since December, so I'm a new Christian. But it was a long time coming for me. I'm 48 years old. It was a long time coming. My perspective, even before I was a Christian, but it's really firmed it up, is I think I get on stories for a reason. I believe that there's a reason I get onto stories I get onto. And I believe that the stories are more important than me. But that I have a certain stewardship for the stories, and I have to take care of them. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
like, and so it's this sense I have of this is a really important idea. I'm here for a reason. I shouldn't screw it up. I need to get this right. I need to do it right, and I need to keep going. So I have that plus the general Breitbart sense of speaking truth, and I know this is an issue broadly that Andrew cared about because he told me he cared about it and we talked about it. I know that the stuff I've talked about, Andrew always used to say to me, if I came across a major right-wing scandal, I'd cover in a minute. I'd love to. And the problem is, this is what I call Republican-on-Republican violence. It's the perpetrators of this say they're conservative or say they're Tea Party people, but I don't know what they are because there's a profit motive at stake. And I know so many people who've worked so hard. I mean, like I say, imagine what the Tea Party movement could do with that $3 million cleared up to go to good organizations.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have something over it. They have, the Democrats have another thing called Act Blue. And it acts as a clearinghouse to get money, so you can donate money there if you're a Democrat, and it'll get to quote-unquote good organizations, which just means real. You know, in other words, it's the same thing like, look, if you're a Democrat and you give money to Nancy Pelosi, you'd be mad if it went to Ted Cruz. And I'm completely empathetic with that. I'm like, well, yeah, that would be a scam. That would be wrong. And, I wouldn't like that. Whatever I think about Pelosi's politics, I don't like scams. And so I'm going to keep doing the journalism. I'm going to keep writing about this. I may do a book or something like that, you know, a $2.99 Amazon book or something.
Oh, I was thinking that this is absolutely a book. This is a huge book.
Yeah, I think it is. I'm trying to figure, you know, this is the problem, is that if this is why we miss the loss of Andrew every day. I've got to tell you that the problem becomes, and I'm not going to pick on anybody, the caller, Breitbart, the Blaze, anybody. If you're any of those groups, do you really want to piss off Michelle Bachmann? Do you really want, you see what I'm saying? Do you really want to try to expose it? There's a lot of pressure, any right-wing news organization, to not come out with something bad, not just against Bachmann, but against anybody, even McConnell to a certain extent, even Boehner. They have to pull their punches sometimes. And there's a speech that I found of Andrews where he's speaking at some Tea Party event, and he says, he's sort of leaning over the podium and he laughs. He goes, I'm so glad no one can tell me what to do. I'm so glad I didn't come up through establishment Republicans, and I can just wake up in the morning and think, what would Andrew do? And just do that. Everyone's applauding and everything like that. And I found this only just a few months ago, you know, long after he died. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's it. So, I mean, I've seen a lot of people say, well, I guess the solution is don't donate to candidates, or, like, don't donate except to candidates. Mm. But, you know, I think if there's people out there doing good journalism, support them. I mean, if there's people out there doing good art, support them. If there's an organization you know is a good organization,
right,
support them. You know, I mean, I don't want the money just to go away. I want the money to be redirected to something useful.
Well, I think the message here, Lee, is it's not about exposing the Tea Party candidates and their corruption that's obviously infiltrated the Tea Party candidates. Message is about bringing personal power back to the people. I mean, if you can expose these Tea Party candidates and get them to go away, it's like shark's teeth. You know, there's always another row of people behind them to keep coming up. But the problem is it's basic human sociology. People want to follow. They want somebody to worship, and they want somebody to follow. And when you crash their idols, it's disturbing.
Yeah.
We got to go back to the founders and shift the train of thought back to the people having the power and being in charge of those that they send to government, and we've got to take the government folks off the pedestal. They're not rock stars. We got to take the rock star status away from them. We got to stop idolizing them and worshiping them, and start bringing that power back to the people. That's the message.
I agree completely, and I think that. But to me, part of it is, if you build a good system, that if you build an organization where transparency is built right into the organization,
mm-hmm.
and it's not a byproduct, it's part of what you do, then you can fix things. If you don't have a good system, then you're relying on people to be honest, and that doesn't, we just know that doesn't work, there's a reason. I mean, I can make all kinds of analysis to big government stuff. When you see, if you have a welfare system that lets people scam the welfare system, people will scam the welfare system, right? On the Pigford story I worked on with Andrew, if you can get $50,000 for claiming you attempted to farm and you don't need to show any proof, people will do that, right?
Right.
Just human nature.
Right.
So create a good system. And if we sit around waiting for the government to reform itself, it's never, ever, ever going to happen. But if we build organizations where we're like, look,
mm-hmm.
we're going to build this transparency, and we're going to build honesty, and it's all going to be up there. You can check it out online anytime you want to. You can see what we're doing. You're in a better position to do something, and we can do that. It's possible to do something like that. You know, it's possible to build a system that's more honest, and I think that's what we have to do. They need to be better organizations, because the organizations that are out there now, they're just not good.
Well, they're scamming us.
They're
scamming.
That's right, yeah.
Absolutely.
And
Lee
they have no reason to stop. Yeah.
Absolutely amazing what you're doing, and we're going to continue to follow this. I hope that you will come back and keep us posted. This has been one of the most enlightening hours I think I've spent in a really long time. I mean, we all know this is going on. You've really uncovered the details of it. What you're doing is really amazing. We look forward to the book.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
We can follow you at leestranahan.com. And you're on Facebook and Twitter at Stranahan. Is there anywhere else that we can follow you? Is there anything else I'm missing?
If you go to Lee Stranahan, if you follow me on Twitter, that's a good place to keep up with what I'm doing. I hopefully am going to be part of this writers thing soon that'll be kind of neat, where you can kind of subscribe to writers. That won't be the only place, but it's a neat new business model for writers, where, like, you pay $5 and you can read me and a bunch of other writers. And it's kind of cool because it's a way for writers to get paid from the people who are actually reading them. You see what I'm saying? And one of the things I like, it's called Beacon Reader. One of the things I like about what they're doing is they don't restrict me from anything. So I can put my stuff there, but if I want to publish in a book, I can do that. If I want to cross-post it, I can do that. So that's another thing where I just signed up, and that's coming soon. So
awesome. Okay. Thank you. I can't thank you enough for coming on tonight. This has just really, truly been amazing. So we'll be following you, and I'd love for you to come back as things develop.
Cool. Thanks very much.
Thanks. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
And our leadership abroad are inextricably linked. Our friends and allies must again be able to trust us. From Israel to Colombia, from Poland to the Philippines, our allies and friends have to know that we will be reliable and consistent and determined. And our foes can have no reason to doubt our resolve, because peace really does come through strength.
Just when you thought it was all over, when you thought it was time to hang it all up, Lisa is back.
It really is all over. Every week we work to find the most up-to-date stories to give you and bring you the latest news, and we never have time to talk about it. So I don't know what that's all about. That was amazing, Cindy. We actually only have about a minute left before we have to close out the show. That was just amazing. Actually, I'm going to rerun this show tomorrow night on Missouri Grassroots Radio. You can listen to this interview again. Please send this link to your friends. I think what Lee Stranahan said tonight was probably the most amazing groundbreaking information that Tea Party and grassroots folks could ever get. Just truly amazing what he's been uncovering.
An amazing hour.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, we're gonna wrap it up. Join us here tomorrow. Join us here tomorrow on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm going to replay this show tomorrow night. Join Dave Court on Friday and Saturday nights, and Cynthia Davis on Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. here on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We will be here again Wednesday evening, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, with another version of Missouri Grassroots Radio, Culture Vigilante, and more news that we will probably not have time to get to. Thanks for sitting in with me tonight, Cindy. We'll be here again next week. Good night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.